They say it works when you work it, you know, and that we can only keep what we have by giving it away. Check it out.
Right, let's have an AA meeting. My name is Misty, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Misty.
Hi. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. Okay, this reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, and I must have this thing. Not just myself, but there's a couple other people in here. I saw God excited when they found out who the speaker was. He's a friend of mine. I met him in these four walls, and if what they say is true about everything in Texas is bigger, he's from Dallas, and I'd like to welcome Mr. Derek G.
Derek Alcoholic, Derek. What up, my people? What up, y'all? What's going on? What's going on, y'all? It's always an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to share with the fellowship to save my life, you know? I wouldn't be here today, literally, if it wasn't for y'all, you know? I came in these rooms, and I didn't know what to expect or, you know, what I was going to do with my life, and, you know, y'all just looked at me and said, keep coming back, and for family that's here today, man, your first meeting, man, I'm going to tell you what they told me, you know, I'm going to tell you the same message. Look, we ain't trying to convince you, you might be an alcoholic, we ain't even trying to call you an alcoholic, all we have to tell you is, you don't have to live like that no more, Kimbo, you don't have to live like that no more. It took me a while to get that. It took me a while to get that message. It really did, but I'm grateful that y'all were patient and kind enough to let me keep coming back, eating y'all cookies and drinking y'all coffee. So I'm actually glad that reading was read, because that's normally how I start. But I'll just go ahead and get into it. As a kid, the church we went to growing up, they sang this song called I Know What Prayer Could Do. And y'all taught me what prayer can do. So I want y'all to join me real quick in the prayer before we get started. Our Father, infinite wisdom, creative intelligence, beautiful loving spirit, living presence of the universe, ultimate Southern gentleman, as an inspired Southern gentleman, I know we don't go places where we're not invited, and we don't stick around places where we're not wanted. So right now we invite you to come and hang out with us and stick and stay. Also, if you could, please help us set aside everything we think we know about ourselves, about everybody in this room, about the 12 steps, about recovery, about sobriety, and more importantly, about you, sweet, loving God. So we might have a new experience, a fresh experience with it all. Please help us feel, see, and hear a life-changing truth. Your name. Amen.
Amen.
So let's get it. I was born to a Aboriginal Seminole minister. That was my father. And my mother, she's an Aboriginal Creek nurse. Born in Dallas, Texas. If y'all know anything about the Creeks and the Seminoles, they do not get along. And that was pretty much my parents' relationship. It was constant war. But the one thing they did have in common was they both were raging alcoholics. Yeah, even my father. He was never really in my life. One thing he taught me was one of the last things he said to me, which was, boy, you don't need me, you need God. And that later became true, so I'm grateful for my father. And my mother, I love her to death, y'all. I love her still to this day, to death. But, you know, growing up and I'm sure most of y'all can relate to this, growing up in an alcoholic house, there was a lot of nervousness and a lot of anxiousness and a lot of fear and a lot of abuse, you know. My mom's best answer to anything I did that she didn't like was, boy, go give me the extension cord, you know. So there was a lot of whoopings with extension cords that, you know, that wrecked my mind and my body. So, you know, there was a lot of mental damage. You know, I was a chubby little kid. Looked like a cabbage patch, if y'all remember what those look like, you know. And, again, my mom, with her beautiful mind, thought that, you know, I should be cultured. And we lived in some of the most violent streets in Dallas, Texas. You know, it was Oak Cliff, South Dallas area. That's where I grew up with. I don't know if y'all been seeing the First 48, but most of that was filmed in Oak Cliff. And my mom thought it was a wonderful idea to let her little chubby cabbage patch kid with dimples play the cello. Yeah. So I had to walk through the streets of Oak Cliff carrying a cello. And I never felt comfortable in my own skin, y'all, you know. Not many kids in the hood play cello, you know. I'm just going to say it, you know. And I remember I had a friend named DeMarco. And DeMarco could backflip, man. He was the captain of the Pop Warner football team. This dude was on, like, as a kid. And I remember looking at DeMarco one day and like, dude, how do you know how to do so much cool stuff, man? You know? Like, I don't even know what I'm doing in my own skin, bro. And everybody like DeMarco, you know? How do you know how to do that? You know? And here I was walking through the hood. They playing guns and football, and I'm playing the cello. And then when I would go play the cello, the kids that I were around knew I was from the hood, and they would look at me like, yeah, we really don't communicate with your type of a person, you know. So I was always isolated, even in around people. You know, so it made for good self-pity, a lot of depression. You know, I had to learn how to fight real quick because I had that cello. So I had to learn how to drop that cello safely and throw these hands because I was getting beat inside the house. Y'all wouldn't go give it to me out in the streets. Y'all wouldn't go. You know, that was not going to happen. I refuse. I don't care how much of cabbage patch I look like, we gonna dance. That was my motto. And when I turned 14, a bittersweet moment happened. And I describe it as bittersweet because for me and the way I was living, that's exactly what happened. My mom died of cancer at the age of 14. And y'all know I said bittersweet. It was sweet because I didn't have to take that verbal abuse no more. And I didn't have to live in that fear of getting my butt beat with that extension cord. But it was bitter because that was my mama, y'all. Who was going to take care of us? Who was going to raise us? It was just me and my sister, you know. Where were we going to live? Where were we going to stay? I was sitting on my porch crying. And Dave, my buddy across the street, just saw me bawling. And Dave came over to me and he said, "Say, D, let's take a walk." I was like, "Okay." I was like, "Where are we going?" He was like, "We're going to go to the candy house." So we walked to the candy house. And the candy house lady knew me. She knew me because I was a chubby kid with dimples. So she kind of liked seeing me, you know, because I was probably put her kids through college. And and she looked at me, and the first thing she said was, "Baby, you all right? We ain't got no Snickers today." And Dave said, no, we don't want no Snickers. We want some 40s. And she said, okay. They back there in the cooler. So we gave her a dollar, went to that backyard, reached in that chest, got me a 40 ounce of Old English, y'all. Yeah. See, I was embarrassed walking down the street with that cello. Walking with that 40, I felt alive. I felt like I was a part of the hood I had been trying to be a part of for the long time, even though I was in it. I felt connected. Everybody who was making fun of me, even the people I had to fight, joined around me now all of a sudden, you know. And I cracked the seal on that 40 and tasted that 40. And I was like, is this what y'all been drinking? This tastes like gorilla piss. Now, let me say this, y'all, before y'all get out in the streets and say so. I do not know what gorilla piss tastes like, y'all. I ain't never drank gorilla piss a day in my life, but I'm sure that 40 ounce of Old English tastes like gorilla piss, you know. So I sip it again, and I'm just trying to get used to the taste. I'm sipping it and trying to get used to the taste, and all of a sudden, something happened. Y'all know what happened. That feeling came over me, you know what I'm saying? That feeling of ease and comfort, you know? Yeah, and I had forgot my mama had died. I forgot I had worried about what was going on with me. I forgot all that. Finally, I could just chill and let things be the way they were. Finally, you know? In the big book, it says this. And I'll try to fast forward this a little bit. We don't like to pronounce individuals as alcoholics, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Go step over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. Try it and stop abruptly. First step. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, right? So fast forward to now. Homeless kid, staying with different families to graduate through high school, coming up out of the hood, got a six-figure job, and I was hustling an outside issue on the side. So money wasn't a problem at all. Finally, I made it. I moved out of the hood into Frisco, Texas, Plano area, which is the suburbs outside of Dallas, and I had made it. Got a great job, y'all. Finally. Finally, my money matched my ego. You know what I'm saying? And boy, the drinking took off. I'm talking about we were partying all the time. We were going to strip clubs. We was going to bars. We was everywhere. I remember walking into a strip club with my partners one time. And I was always afraid, ever since a kid now. Y'all remember I told you I grew up in the hood. So ever since a kid, I was afraid around being around a certain type of person or a certain type of people, you know. So we walked in the strip club, and my partner said, say, D, did they pass you down when you came in here? And I was like, no, I ain't get passed down. You got passed down? No, I ain't get passed down. My boy Macho said, man, I could have bought my gun in here. And I said, y'all left y'all's in the car? Like, really? Because again, I couldn't tell them that I was afraid to be in that type of environment, those type of small rooms like that. And not only that, but I didn't tell them, I'm going to go drink a whole bunch of liquor to calm my nerves to get to where I need to be right. But I would always overshoot it. You know, I would come to the next day, they'd be like, D, do you know what you did last night, bro? And I'd be like, no, no. And they'd be like, you did this. You almost got us kicked out. Like, and again, this ain't my character, so it's hard for me to believe that I'm actually doing what they saying I'm doing in these black guys. Well, I'll share this with y'all. So, I began to drive drunk, solo, by myself, you know. And I totaled a car. And money wasn't the thing, so I bought another car. And I totaled that car. And money wasn't a thing, so I bought another car. And I totaled that car. That's three cars right there. The fourth car I totaled, I got the worst news I had ever had. And that was the police showed up. Well, no, the car snitched on me. Let me say that, y'all. Y'all watch out for these favorite fashion, these cars or whatever. Yeah, the car snitched on me. I got into a wreck and the car said, Derek, are you okay? And I was like, yeah. We noticed the vehicle was in a wreck. We're sending the police and the ambulance out for you right now. So you just take care, stay in the car, and somebody will be there to help you out real quick. Oh, my goodness. They showed up and gave me a DWI. And the only way I could lose my six-figure job was getting a DWI. I was in full fear. Full fear. So right after that, the next day, fourth call. Me and my ex-wife at the time went and got a brand new car. And while we were leaving the car lot, she said, "You stink, dude. Like, I could smell alcohol coming out your pores, and I was embarrassed to be around them people with you, Derek. Like, let's go to the spa and sweat this out." You know? And I was like, okay, I guess, you know, I couldn't smell myself for some reason, you know. I probably smell like gorilla piss, but I don't know. So, we go to the spa, I sweat it out, and great experience, y'all. If you're ever in Dallas King Spa, go have you a good time. And after we left the spa, I said, "You know what we should do? Let's go get some drinks." And she looked at me like, "I know this fool didn't just total all these cars, just sweat this alcohol out, and then want to go drink again." And I saw that confusion on her face, so I said, wait. How about you pick the drink?" And she said, "I can pick the drink." I said, "Yeah." She said, "Okay." We go to a local bar called Twin Peaks in Dallas. It's like Hooters for barbecue. That's pretty much what it is. And the waitress comes over to the table, and she was like, "Hi, can I get y'all a drink?" And my ex-wife looked this lady square in her face with the most serious look on her face and said, "Yes, can we get a shot of Jack Daniels, please?" And I looked at her like, "I know this fool didn't just order a shot of Jack Daniels for us to share. Like, what? Why you share a shot? Like, that don't make no sense whatsoever." That shot came. She sipped the top of that shot off. I sipped the other half of that shot. You talking about drinking and stopping abruptly? Have a half a shot. And if you're a potential alcoholic, see what that does to you. The phenomenon, as described in this book, the phenomenon of craving hit me so hard. I was like, "Oh, I need a drink. I need a drink, drink, drink." In Dallas on Sundays, the liquor stores, they don't sell liquor in Dallas. So you got to go to a bar. She wouldn't let me go to a bar by myself because I wanted to drink by myself, because this hell will go order a half a shot and go share a half a shot with me. Like, how dare she do that, you know? That Monday, the phenomenon of craving took over. I bought a gallon of Jack Daniels, a handle. I had made a little trick out of it by putting my finger in the handle and putting it right here on my arm, and I was drinking it like that. From 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock, I had drank everything in that gallon but about that much alcohol. It took three people to tell me what happened that night. First person was my ex-wife. She came out and saw I had wrecked the car again. So this is my fourth car I done wrecked. She said that she came out and said, "You wrecked the car? You wrecked the car?" And I pushed her. I grew up with sisters, so I was taught never to fight women. But she knew that that was my way of aggressively putting my hands on a woman by pushing her. She was done. Straight out. She was like, Nah, D, I know you. For you to push me, that was an act of violence. I said, "Man, I'm going to walk over to Jamoke house." My friend Jamoke stayed in the apartments with me. So he stayed like in the front of the apartments. I stayed in the back. I said, "I'm going to go walk over to Jamoke house. He owed me $2,800 for an outside issue, a couple of pounds of an outside issue I had let him borrow. And I need money for an attorney to fight this DWI case I just got. So I'm going to go collect my money from Jamoke." I go to Jamoke house. Moki telling the story. I go to Moki house, knock on the door and say, "Moki, I need my money, man." And he like, "D, baby, it's me. Really? Like, calm down, B. You know, hey, man, what, I'm just supposed to pull $2,800 out the car? You don't give me my money, I'm going to shoot you." All in the blackout. I didn't remember any of this. Moki said, "Really?" I pull my Glock out and start firing at this guy. My best friend in a blackout. The lady downstairs called 911. My sister now tells the story. My ex-wife called my sister and told my sister I had wrecked another car, went out of my mind, I pushed her. My sister's coming from Arlington, Texas, which took about an hour to come to where I was. She says she shows up. The police is trying to get me out of Jamoke's house, but I'm not letting them in. My sister comes up behind the police to see what's going on, and she said, like she was picking me up from elementary school, I stopped and said, "Oh, hey, Tara." Like, it was not, like the police went down, like, no, none of that was going on. She said they pulled me out the house, slammed me on my chin, and put me in the back of the car. I came to in jail. And had no clue while I was there. I called my ex-wife. I said, "What's going on? Why am I in jail?" And she said, "Fool, you want me to talk like this over these phones and you know they recording this?" And I was like, "I don't know what happened." She said, "You shot at Jamoke last night." It came back to me like a nightmare. That's what happens when I drink. So, I do some area management, you know. Well, let me say this first. I spent 2 months in state jail trying to beat that case. They were trying to get me for attempted murder. I spent 2 months in state jail trying to beat that case. Jamoke wouldn't testify, and the lady that called 911 wouldn't testify. They let me out with just a misdemeanor charge of firing a gun in the municipal area. Guess what I did as soon as I got out with them 2 months of having to be in jail? I went and got me a tall boy at 7-Eleven because I deserved that one. I had been sober 2 months. I was thirsty in jail. I deserved that. Let me drink now. I've been locked up, y'all. I deserve a drink. Try some area management. You know, area management is, I'm going to jail too much in Dallas. I need to move. You know what I'm saying? Life unmanageable, y'all. I move down to Victoria, Texas. I get down there, and I find myself there again. I get blackout drunk, call every woman in my family out their names, and they drop me off at y'all doorstep. That's how I met Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked in my first meeting, and I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I was shook. The clubhouse smelled like the intake at the jail, you know, so I'm like, "Oh, I don't know what's going on here." They was offering me coffee, and the last time I was offered coffee was in an interrogation room. I'm like, "Oh, no, y'all. It's, I'm waiting on them to tell me to come to this podium and testify. Testify where you were at." I'm like, "Nah, I'm out of here. Y'all got me." But see, something happened that first meeting. And I know it now as a spiritual experience. What happened was, it was an old guy that looked nothing like me. Because I came in with issues, y'all. I came in with issues. Then nobody in that room looked like me, man. Nobody. And I was like, man, these people don't know me, man. I got black problems, man. What's going on? Like, these people don't have a clue as what's going on with me. And it took that old man to raise his hand to share. And he said, I'm an alcoholic. When I drink, I'm trying to do my best impression of his voice. When I drink, for some reason, abracadabra, Harry Potter, my guns magically appear in my hand. And I said, what the heck did I walk into? Dang, that happened to you too, bro? Oh my goodness. And they looked at me and they told me, Derek, we ain't gonna call you no alcoholic. We ain't gonna even try to convince you you might be one. All we have to tell you is, you don't have to live like that no more. Y'all told me to give me a sponsor, go through the process, connect with a power greater than myself, and help somebody. Guess what I heard? Help somebody. So I didn't hear any of that other stuff. Y'all said help somebody, man. My first job, I was making coffee for y'all. You know what I'm saying? And me being the alcoholic I am, man, I was over there making like shots of espresso. I was over there making a little cappuccino, putting that little heart in it, you know what I'm saying? And the guy who later on became my sponsor, he walked up to me and said, D, man. Chill out on the coffee, man. Just make regular Folgers coffee, bro. Maxwell, regular coffee, man. Like, people is getting up during the meetings going to the bathroom, man. Like, bro, look, it's a line forming, D. Like, come on, chill out. So after that, I was picking up cigarettes and ashtrays, you know. Y'all, I was homeless at that time. I had lost everything. I was homeless. I was sleeping on my sister's couch. Even with an ego sleeping on her couch. Like, I'm Rick James, you know. Definitely. Messed up in my head. I was sick, y'all. I was sick. Sleeping on the floor on an air mattress, praying that that air mattress had enough air in it by the morning. Praying. Y'all know what I'm saying? I don't know if y'all slept on an air mattress, man. Y'all, but hey, man, I'm talking to people who slept on an air mattress right now. Them the people I want to connect with. Same. And the fellowship, man, what y'all did for me, would y'all let me go to these area meetings and these area conventions out of town? Y'all let me sleep in the bed for a weekend. That's why I love the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. And I'll do whatever I can for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I was down, y'all didn't make me feel like I was down. You know? My family had turned their back on me. My friends turned their back on me. And guess what? Being in service, I started to feel better. I felt pain better. I felt misery better. I felt depression better when I was away from y'all. When I was with y'all, I had joy. But I couldn't get that joy to leave that parking lot after I left. So, July 17, 2020, I decided I was going to end it all. I wanted to be with my mama. So my last drink was to try to end it all. That same gun I was shooting at Jamoke with, I found myself dry firing in the roof of my mouth, trying to time it out. The very same one. I went and needed some liquid courage. Alcohol would do stuff for me, so I knew it would give me the courage to complete the job. Alcohol stopped working, y'all, because I'm here today. I slept in the park that night, and a rat ripped through my arm. And I showed up at a meeting the next day, July 18th of 2020. And I showed y'all what my arm looked like. And y'all did something y'all ain't never did to me before. Y'all cringed. It scared me to see that the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, who normally laughed at my pain, now, oh, D, man, like, man, you need to get that looked at. You know? It scared me. And my sponsor walked up to me and he said, hey, D, I've been seeing you come around here. I've been seeing you be of service, making coffee, making diarrhea coffee. But I'm going to tell you right now, D, you just too sick to rely on the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous to keep you sober by itself. You must go through this process as is outlined in this big book. And I said, I'm ready. I'm ready. Step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Yeah. He asked me, D, what's your conception of God? I said, can I make up one? He said, D, your sick mind going to make the creator? You going to create the creator with that sick mind. I was like, well, he was like, no. What is your conceptions of it? What do you know about God? What have you told about God since you was a kid? Or this power greater than you, what were you told since you was a kid? I said, God is love, God is wisdom, God is intelligence, God is discipline, you know, God is life. You know, I was naming them all, I was killing them with them, you know, I was going to get a straight A on that question. And he looked at me and he said, that's good, Eric, that's good. But see, there are certain times, because you're an alcoholic, there are going to be certain times. And he told me certain means definite, definitely going to happen. There are certain times where you're going to go flat insane. You're going to lose your mind, boy. Flat insane. Whether it's sitting behind a light and waiting on that person in front of you to turn green, whether you're standing in the line at the grocery store and you're standing behind the last person that writes checks at the grocery store, you got to be somewhere, whether somebody cuss you out, it's going to be a certain time you're going to go flat insane and you're going to need a power that's going to pull you out of that. You're going to need a power that's going to pull you out of that. So what's your conceptions? I said, well, he said, that's a good start. He said, but I challenge you to find another conception personal to you that you can answer to. So after some prayer and meditation, he also told me, find a conception ain't nobody ever called you before, too. See, people call me loving. They call me full. Oh, Derek, let me get some of that wisdom you got, D. Oh, Derek, you're so intelligent. Oh, my God, you're intelligent, Derek. Derek, you're so disciplined. You went to college for 2 years? Disciplined, you know? Derek, you're the life of the party. He said, I challenge you to find a power ain't nobody ever called you before. And I found a four-letter word. And ain't nobody ever called me this four-letter word ever before. And I had prejudices about it. I had a problem with it when I first heard it. Yep, I did. But after doing some meditation and some studying on it, I found out that all this word means is absolute. Lacking nothing. Perfect. Complete. And that word was holy. See, I needed an absolute love. Something I knew that loved me. And one trying to beat me with an extension cord for me to do the right thing or when I made a mistake or when I messed up. I needed something that loved me regardless of what I did. Because I was going to make some mistakes and I needed something that cared about me. And when I finally realized that there's a power out there that wanted nothing but my best interest in hand, I was able to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of that power. Because I couldn't do it. I knew that my thinking, I was sick because my thinking and my emotions was throwed off. It was just throwed off. And I couldn't manage them. I couldn't manage the thinking and the feelings. I couldn't. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. Man, that's step four. Man, I ain't never did an inventory in my life. The closest thing was in court, you know. in court, standing in front of a judge. Where were you at this time? What were you doing at this time? You know, the witnesses say you were, you know. And I realized that every resentment, most of the resentments, there were some legit resentments, but most of the resentments I had, my fingerprints were all on them. Give you an example. Fourth step, my mama was on her. Y'all know my mama was on my fourth step, my resentment, y'all. You know what I'm saying? Getting beat like that, man. And now I can finally tell somebody I'm getting beat growing up, you know. That fourth column in that fourth step asked me four questions. Where were you, selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or afraid? Four questions. Where was I selfish? What did I want, good or bad? I wanted my mama to love me regardless of what I did and treat me like I was her only begotten son. You know, what did I do? Self-seeking. What did I do to get what I wanted? Good or bad? Well, I would lie to her. I would hide things from her. I wouldn't tell her the truth. I wouldn't let her know really what I was going through and, you know, what I was dealing with on the inside. Where was I dishonest? What was the lie I told her or told myself? I told myself, growing up with my mama, and my mama was like Clara Huxtable. Literally, that was the lie I told myself. I really believed that my mama was like Clara Huxtable. And that wasn't my mama. My mama was a gun-toting, Bible-carrying woman who grew up in some of the roughest periods of this country. My mama was hardcore. And I was lying to myself about who my mama really was. That's why I stayed in so much trouble. You know? And where was I frightened? I was always frightened of that crazy woman, man. It's like, I did. She was alcoholic. I didn't know who was going to come home. I didn't know if the nurse was going to come home. Or I didn't know if that raging alcoholic was going to come home. And in that, my sponsor looked across at me telling him that. He said, Derek, you have a tendency to lie, bro. You have a tendency to lie, and you don't have to, bro. That's a defect of character. And when I saw how that defect of character were hurting others, and especially myself, I was entirely ready to have God remove all those defects of character. Anytime I made them little quick mistakes, or I treated his daughters not like they was his daughters of God, you know, when I treated them wrong, I humbly asked him to remove them shortcomings. Hey, made a list of all persons I had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. When I did my fourth step, after my fourth step and the fifth step, I said, "Woo, I can burn this, right? It's time to get this burnt." He said, "No, Derek, we're going to use that to make your amends. We're going to use them names from your fourth step to start your eighth step list." What? You mean I got to make amends to Yonder Mama? Yes, you got to make amends to Yonder Mama. Yonder died during my nine-step process, man. He was murdered by his girlfriend in Dallas. I had to go back to Dallas, go to his funeral. And I made my amends to his mom. Like, Mama D, what can I do to make it right? She said, "Baby, just the fact that you want to make it right, something done changed in you. And the fact that you ain't in there drinking all my liquor out of my liquor cabinet, something has definitely changed in you. So you keep doing what you're doing." And I asked her, I said, "Mama D, what was hard is, like, you know, because I saw her and she wasn't crying too much. You know, maybe I thought she was just being hard in front of us. So I said, "Mama D, what was hard is burying Yandy or giving birth to Yandy?" And she looked at me and she said, "D, I'm going to tell you. It was giving birth." And I said, "Why you say that?" She said, "Because Yandy popped up on me. I did not plan on having Yandy. That wasn't like something I sat down and said, I'm going to do this." She said, "But the way y'all was living, I was planning on going to y'all funerals. See, I was planning this day." She said, "So, baby, whatever, you just keep doing what you're doing, whatever it is. 10th step. Continue to take personal inventory of the wrong, promptly admitted it." I run 10 step all day, y'all. All day. Because I know at any moment, at any given time of the day, I could go slap insane, black out, in rage, in anger, and throw everything the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and this power greater than myself has blessed me with today all away. It's all through prayer and meditation to improve that conscious contact with God, y'all. As we understood, I'm praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. That's all the power I need. I don't need no more power than the power to do God's will. There's a meditation I do, and I'm going to try to wrap this up real quick. There's a meditation I do. It's a breathing meditation. What it is you inhale, and exhale. I got it from the Hebrews, right? I can find my spirituality in all religions, by the way. Let me say that, you know. And the Hebrews believe that it's disrespectful to write out the name of God. So they'll write G-D. You know, they'll leave nothing letters out. And they also believe that the closest sound you can make to God's name is the sound you make when you So they believe that from the day you born to the day you die, whether you realize it or not, you're constantly trying to utter the name of God through breath. That's my meditation. I need that contact with Him. I need that with Him. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. See, this was the easiest, softer way for me to learn how to live principles. I naturally couldn't create a way for me to learn how to live principle. And not only that, but it taught me how to love y'all. Because now I see every single one of y'all, not just as alcoholics and addicts. I see y'all in this room as people who can carry the message of a spiritual awakening. Every last one of y'all. Every single last one of y'all. If you're here today, you can. I'm so grateful for this fellowship. I went from being unemployable to never have to work again a day in my life, y'all. Never. Because this power has taken care of me. I spend most of my time with the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I'm so grateful. Y'all took a homeless dude and showed him how to live in a home. I have a home now. First home I ever had in my life, all from practicing some principles. So if you're here today and you're not too sure about this thing like I was, I pray you're going to go through the torture, the pain that I went through. I'm going to say just like they told me, get you a sponsor, go through this process, find you a power greater than yourself, and help somebody. And I ain't saying every day going to be roses, but you're going to have a way of living that's going to make it feel like it's okay. And that's all I ever wanted. So I'm still learning to be humble, trying to stay teachable, and thank y'all so much for letting me.
Thank you,
that's what I'm talking about. Absolutely. You have me laughing, you have me crying, but most of all, you have me realize this is why I do what I do. I can't thank you enough. In Hawaii, we say something, mahalo, means more than thank you. I'd ask Amy to pass out the chips. One of my best friends. Yay.
My name is Amy, and I'm definitely an alcoholic, and it's so good to see you, y'all. So here at the Blue Chip Speaker, Monday Night Speaker Meeting, we have a chip system to denote your time and sobriety. We start off with this white chip. You're just coming in, you're coming back. You want to try this way a lot?
This song goes. 12 steppers all around the world, as well as to those who have gone before us and to those who may be on their way. They said, "Work's when you work it, you know, and that we can only keep what we have by giving it away." Check it out. Okay, this song is going to help you with your evolution. Only if you're sick and tired of the pollution. The steps that we take are all about solutions. They will even help you make your restitution. The steps can eliminate the negativity and at the same time accentuate the positivity. You may even comprehend the word serenity. Now we're gonna take the steps to our best ability. And the very first step is about a surrender. And you may even be a first time offender. Or you may be coming back from your last bender. But welcome to the club, you still can be a member. And step two, that's a power that restores sanity. It's greater than your stuff, it's not about your vanity. Don't forget about the pain that brought you calamity. Now you owe it to yourself to take responsibility. When we get to step three, it's time to make a decision for our will and lives to undergo a revision. No longer do we have to feel a sense of division. We're on a new journey, so watch out for collision. Steps one, two, and three helps you build a foundation. But don't forget to cancel all reservations. Welcome to your new life, here's your invitation. But more will be revealed, what a revelation. When we take the steps, we learn to free our minds. We practice principles so we can redesign. We keep it real simple, just a day at a time. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high, and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment, cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you work it, so keep coming back. Hey. It's step four, where you're gonna take your inventory. Now we're looking for the truth, not for fame and glory. Just put it down on paper, there's no need to worry. It won't be very long before you tell your story. And step five, take your fourth step and share it with another. Chances are you did some harm to your sister and your brother. The same thing goes for your father and your mother. Now we're living in the light, we're not hiding undercover. Step six is how we deal with our character defects. No longer are we twisted, now we're coming correct. We're building character and we can feel the effect. Now we have a second chance, so get ready, get set. In the seventh step, we learn about humility. We recognize our shortcomings and we find stability. But we gotta keep it real and keep it in reality. That's why we take the steps to our best ability. When we take the steps, we learn to free our mind. We practice principles so we can redesign. We keep it real simple, just a day at a time. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high, and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment, cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you work it, so keep coming back. Hey. And step eight, we make a list of the ones we did harm to. We're cleaning up the past cause it's something we must do. It takes will and us, and we suggest you follow through. What you're about to do is gonna change your point of view. Now in the ninth step, it's time to mend some fences. We step up to the plate about our past offenses. If we're gonna make it right, we drop all defenses. By now we have begun to regain our senses. The tenth step is all about the application, so that we can learn to face any situation. Remember that it's not about a graduation. You know the tenth step is really a continuation. Step 11, we begin to practice meditation. It guides us through the world like a navigation, and we're not afraid to ask for the inspiration. But we gotta keep it moving, there's no hesitation. In step 12, we practice principles in all our affairs. We try to be of help, especially when we share. Now we're living consciously, we are awake and aware. So take this message to another, let them know that you care. Come on. When we take the steps, we learn to free our minds. Come on. We practice principles so we can redesign. Come on. We keep it real simple, just a day at a time. Come on. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high, and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment, cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you work it, so keep coming back. So there you have it, steps 1 through 12. Remember, you don't have to step alone. We step together one day at a time. And no matter what, we keep coming back. So until the next time, peace in, peace out.